From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Glad you're with us alongside Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet, Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed, the chairman of the board, making the show happen for us in Nashville. Gentlemen, good morning. Paul, how would you describe the show's mood today on this Friday?
Pissed off for greatness. That's the standard definition, but I could tweak it a little bit, I guess. I don't know. I've had a frustrating week. And so when I've got 4 hours between me and the weekend, I think it has a tendency to eke into the old show, boys.
Well, I can tell you, I'll be prepared for these 4 hours. I will not be letting off the gas. And at 2 o'clock, I will be.
that's a good way to put it.
Well, not only will I be letting off the gas at 2 o'clock, I'll be slamming the brakes off the gas at 2 p.m. also. But until then,
and heading to the liquor cabin,
we are going 90 miles per hour right into this weekend, and we are pissed off for greatness as we do so. It's going to be a good show. I can already feel the energy that it's going to be a good show.
It's your call. Are we divulging what we're doing this evening?
Yeah, I think we can.
Go right ahead.
My priority is this show, okay? So we will unveil news on this show. We put out a poll question because Hutton's podcast with Chit Chat was so well received, and it was the fastest podcast that I've done to get 1,000 unique listeners. In under 24 hours, we had 1,000. And Hutton's climbing the ranks as some of the most listened to Chit Chat podcast.
Tremendous list.
Getting close to the top five of my all-time episodes, and we'll continue to climb. So I put the poll question out there. Typically, I'll save a part two for the next season. We'll wait a year and revisit and then go into another part of someone's career or life and get into a different conversation. But Hutton's podcast on Chit Chat was so well received, I had to ask the question, should we waive this clause where I wait a year and go ahead and make part two the next podcast? And overwhelmingly, I think it was 70-30 in the end. With a lot of people voting, the people have spoken and they want Jonathan Hutton on Chit Chat again. So after the show today, early evening, Hutton, can we reveal where we're going? I don't know about the rules about you saying where we're headed.
Yeah, we're going back to where we were. We're going to the Standard.
We're going to the Standard.
Why not?
Smith House. We're going to the Standard.
I feel like I want to.
We're
going to
record part two of the podcast.
Audience member.
It will drop Monday morning.
So I want to come. I want to come and just listen to it as a live podcast.
We're going to
have a bit of a studio audience there. Hunter Briley, the sponsor of Regal Realty and the sponsor of the podcast, he'll be there.
We are going to get into some gritty details tonight.
It's going to be.
And this has crossed my mind this week. You know, fast forward a few years and the next tell all podcast that we do, imagine the details we're going to get into then.
Oh,
there's going to be a lot of people that are going to want to listen to that because they may be discussed in the podcast. Yeah. Many yes. people may
many people. Some of them we probably won't names. Be able to name because of libel issues because they're not public figures. But the public figure people,
right?
Oh God!
Oh, I'm look.
Rome is going to burn.
There were a lot of people who listened to the last podcast with me and Hutton that loved the inside sports radio stories. I'm thrilled that management at our station does not listen to the Chit Chat podcast and doesn't hear about old stories about things that went down because that gives us a little bit more freedom to discuss what we want on this podcast. And it is going to be many things will be discussed this evening at the Standard on part two of Jonathan Hutton on Chit Chat. Many things will be discussed on this show today as well. That's a promise. That is the promise we will make today.
Austin Price, VolQuest.com, brings us the VolQuest Report. That's at 10:45. Clay Travis at 11:15. Stephen Godfrey on the show. Chad, you like to describe his segment as?
College football on Adderall. And anyone who's ever heard Godfrey speak on anything knows exactly what I'm talking about. Also, anyone who's ever done Adderall knows exactly what I'm talking about when I say that.
Arthur Smith, we'll hear from him. He has a session with the media today, 12:45. Shane Bowen and Craig Aukerman. With the outside linebackers for Bowen and, of course, special teams for Aukerman, they will follow. We'll check in with those as well. John McClain also has a lot of Zoom calls today with the Texans. He'll join us next week. Reed, how are you doing?
I'm ready for the weekend, boys, and I'm actually I'm with Paul. I kind of want to come down and partake in this as part of a studio audience.
We have a live studio audience in a room that's large enough for a studio audience, but only has two chairs.
We can we can clap and fake laugh with the best of them.
Oh yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Hutner.
We'll be the constant hum of fake background noise during the podcast.
It's like the Howard Stern Christmas party background noise that we play the entire time that Hutner and I are talking.
Oh my God, Terry!
What if we just ran that on a loop through the whole podcast?
That's the My God Terry part.
Yes, that gets me every time. Because at one point, I laugh at myself because I re-listened to that on the show like 2 years after Paul did this. And I swore up and down he was talking about Terry McCormick.
No.
And he's talking about Terry Bradshaw. And he's mimicking the Fox NFL Sunday show.
I was just thinking about our Friday slogan. We could start doing some Friday promos where we say, the midday 180, 4 hours away from the liquor cabinet.
There's 1-5-737-1045, our number.
Plenty of sponsor opportunities attached to that slogan, Paul. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So a lot to get to today. We're going to hit a number of different headlines. The Vic Beasley latest, the Preds return on Sunday after the exhibition yesterday. We'll preview the matchup against the Coyotes. The NBA returned last night. We'll give our thoughts on the setup and the scene. But let's start with the SEC, the conference-only 10-game slate. Doug Matthews alluded to this yesterday when he joined us. It became official yesterday afternoon. Quick plug for Doug. Tomorrow morning, he and Tony Barnhart will have plenty to discuss with the SEC and the upcoming schedule. But, Chad, you say this changes things because, well, two reasons. Of course, they're playing the conference-only schedule. It's going to be a great slate of games. But beyond that, it moves the schedule back, and that affects teams like Tennessee, for instance.
Yeah, so camp was scheduled to start next week with the eyes on that September 5th start date. Now that the season is starting September 26th, I think they're going to back camp up maybe a week to start, but that still gives you over two extra weeks of fall camp and preparation. This makes it far more likely for a true freshman quarterback to come in and win the job. Maybe like a Harrison Bailey at Tennessee, a five-star freshman coming in. Other big-time freshmen across the league, and not just a quarterback. I think it does open up the possibility to see earlier contributions from big-time freshmen across the league as they get ready for the season and start a little bit later. Not to say that Jarrett Garantano won't be the starter when Tennessee opens, which I assume would be against Florida on September 26th. That's a scheduled game on that date, but the SEC could completely rewire everything with this schedule. So we don't know what the schedule is yet because they're adding two games. But, yeah, I think that opens up the possibility for that. I prefer the ACC model. I wish the SEC would have gone with that. In the case of a Tennessee, let's say, if they went with the 10 conference games and plus one non-conference, and you keep it in state, you keep those four big SEC, ACC rivals. Clemson and South Carolina have played for over 100 years straight. That's not going to happen for the first time in over 100 years this year, for instance. You keep Georgia, Georgia Tech, Clemson, South Carolina, Kentucky, Louisville, Florida, Florida State. Tennessee could add an MTSU, for instance, if you keep it in state. You know, you get one other home game against an in-state opponent, and it's a bit of a change-up from what you're seeing with SEC play. And it gives you another game, and then you're playing one less game. That's not a big deal, right? You're playing 10 conference games, all going to be good, all going to be highly watched. And then you're going to get one other game with an in-state opponent. I like that plan with the ACC and what they did, but the SEC went with 10 conference-only games. They feel like they can control the schedule. They can control outbreaks and what happens and having to reschedule games if it's just their conference that they're working with. It should lead to some good football, because every week is certainly going to matter and every week's going to have competitive games throughout. But, man, a September 26th start is not accustomed to that when you're used to a Labor Day weekend start in college football. That's a much later in the fall start. Just 3 weeks later feels a lot different when you're talking about kicking things off September 26th.
So, you know, on top, yeah, they do control the outbreaks because they can maneuver their schedule. as needed as a conference. I wonder, though, if they can set a baseline of guidelines for testing as a conference. You know, that was the big point of emphasis for the Big Ten. They could control as a conference the amount of testing that they would want, to set a standard. SEC could do that, too. Now, if Tennessee's playing MTSU, they can't control how often the Blue Raiders are tested that will be facing the SEC opponent. I think that's the other point of emphasis here, that the Power Five schools going to a conference-only schedule like the Big Ten, like out West, like the SEC, that is a huge check mark on the list of positives for the SEC right now.
I totally agree. It's all about uniformity. That's what they want to see. They want to see the same protocols or at least similar protocols in place. And not just for that, not just who you're testing, but okay, let's say we have 27 guys that test positive and a team needs to move a game. Well, now you have a little bit more flexibility on not just forfeiting games and finding a date to move a game to because you're in control of it. It's like the NFL. You know, for 1 year, they're going to be their own entity separate of everything else in the SEC so they can control their schedule and what happens. Here's one thing that I would say, though. I don't understand necessarily the start at September 26th. I get that this gives you a chance to get everyone back on campus for a month and see what happens when kids get back on campus. And then if you start having a big outbreak right when they get back on campus, well, you can get through that before kickoff, right? That's one bonus. The other thing is, though, they could get back on campus and you find out, well, so many people get infected that the season shuts down for a certain team. And that's another problem. Also, when you start that late, you don't have as much flexibility. If you start August 29th, for instance, and try to play 10 games until December 19th.
It's a great point.
You get a lot of bye weeks. You build in bye weeks to where teams can move. So, for instance, if two SEC teams have the same bye week, one team has a rash of infections, then you can move it a week if you're going to have enough guys healthy by the time you play it then. And then you've got all these weeks to fit in 10 games. When you back up the start of the season, you're shortening the chance you have to move games and you're raising the likelihood of canceling games or teams having to forfeit because of COVID-19.
Do you imagine that they could do here, even I agree with you, Chad, that more flexibility, more weeks would have been better. But you would be pushing fans around here, shuffling fans for sure, if there are fans. A scenario where they could do kind of what MLB just did with Yankees Orioles, where you say, all right, two schools are like the Marlins and the Phillies, and we're just going to completely change who's playing this week. You thought it was, these two schools, but actually we're going to completely change who you're playing this week. And you thought your stadium was dark this weekend, but actually you're hosting.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point, Paul, and I think it's something that they could absolutely do with that flexibility if you started August 29th. You're not going to have as much flexibility now starting September 26th, but you could rearrange the schedule at times when the SEC is in control. Now, this is based on attendance. Philip Fulmer released an email to season ticket holders, to alumni, that I read, and I thought part of the language of it was very smart. And he said that we acknowledge that stadium capacity could change week to week as the season moves along. That is brilliant to me because that leaves open the possibility. Let's say a bunch of kids get back on campus and suddenly you don't have the outbreaks that you thought. So where you thought you're going to have 25,000 people in Neyland Stadium, maybe by mid-October, you can have 75,000. Or you start out with 75,000 and you have problems and you got no fans as you get into October and November. So it gives you that flexibility for each home game to reevaluate what the numbers look like and say, okay, we can sell this many tickets for this game and not lock yourself into one number throughout the season.
So yesterday there was a reported excuse for Vic Beasley for his unexcused absence with the Titans. We'll discuss. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
We're always asked what the 3HL stands for. Truth be told, I have no idea. But I do know that Brent, Don, and Mickey will give you the best in Titans, Vols, and all things sports during your drive home.
How could you not listen to it?
The 3HL, this afternoon, from 2 to 6, on 104.5 The Zone.
So, Chad, Tennessee opens up against Florida. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. I mean, that's the scheduled date for the game, is their kickoff day.
As my good buddy once said after leaving Neyland Stadium after a win over Georgia State, not the loss over Georgia State in 2012, he was screaming to everyone that could hear, bring me the Gators! Bring me the Gators! That was after Derek Dooley got off to the 2-0 start after the game we were at in Atlanta over NC State.
Yeah.
And then beat Georgia State. He was pumped up. And the Gators came, and they went with another win.
That was back when Paul and I thought Justin Hunter was really good.
Yeah, that's right.
Boy, how my opinion changed.
It's also the day where we realized Cordarrelle Patterson is really good. It's different. It also could present an opportunity for a team like Tennessee that certainly does not appear this year to be as good as Florida. But playing them at home, what kind of home field advantage will any team have with limited attendance? We don't know. But I guess if you're going to try to spring a big upset to start your 10 SEC game only season, opening up with Florida at home is as good a spot as any, right? You don't know exactly what you're going to get in that first week. And Tennessee's got, I think, 10 of 11 players, on offense coming back outside of receiver. They've got a lot of veteran guys who are going to be playing. So, yeah, why not? Why not Tennessee over Florida in that first week of the season, which, again, is weird for me to say. On September 26th is the first game of the season for Tennessee and every SEC team.
Paul, verified reporter on Twitter, Angela Morion, tweets out yesterday.
Out of Chattanooga.
Yes. She tweets out yesterday, linebacker Vic Beasley did have a death in the family last week, sources tell me. The funeral was yesterday, in parentheses, Wednesday. Still unclear if this is in any way related to his absence at training camp the last 2 days. To which you say what, Paul?
Which I say, sympathies to Vic Beasley for a loss in the family. It is a traditional adult behavior that if you have a death in the family that is going to cost you work time, you communicate it to your boss. No matter the level of grief, and no matter how tragic the loss, in some way, shape, or form, you communicate to your employer, or you have someone communicate to your lawyer. In the case of an NFL player, you have an agent. Typically, you're close with your agent, and you would be communicating with him during a time like that. This is potentially costing Vic Beasley $50,000 a day. Don't we think that if he or his agent talked to John Robinson and said, I've had a death in the family, I need to attend a funeral and get myself together, that the Titans would have perhaps excused his absence or given him a date by which they say, hey, we're sorry for your loss. We hope you can, how about if you try to make it by Saturday? And then he would have been excused. I mean, this goes in so many ways. Somebody told me, hey, remember you were all over Derrick Henry when he wasn't coming around. And then it turned out he was working towards his class and you look like a fool. I didn't look like a fool. Derrick Henry should have called Mike Mularkey and told him he was working towards classes. This is typical mature adult behavior. Even when you lose someone, I'm not dismissing grief by any means. I've had deaths in my family, as everyone has. And somewhere in the middle of that, there's a period where you have to notify some people. You have to call some people and tell them so-and-so died. You're calling other family members. You have a little list. And on that list, inevitably, is your boss.
And to be clear, it is unexcused. The statement from Robinson yesterday was extremely clear in that regard, where he said, quote, I have been in contact with Vic. He is not here. He understands his absence is unexcused. And he told me he will be reporting to camp in the near future.
Also, if it was cut and dried about this funeral, and the Titans could have tamped down this story further, don't we think he would have?
Yes. Quickly.
It's still a very strange story. There's not a lot of clarity in this at all. You've got the reporter from Chattanooga. By the way, side note about the reporter from Chattanooga. I know her because we were sat together in Kansas City with the Titans AFC Championship game. I was in the auxiliary seating where we were watching on a television, and I was with her and her other reporter from Chattanooga there. So I saw this tweet and I'm thinking, I've seen this woman before. And we sat during the entire Titans Chiefs game because she was there covering the game with her Chattanooga television station. And she knows Mary Frances Hoots.
I was just going to ask.
Intern, okay. Because we were talking about, and MF now works down in Chattanooga for a television station. So we talked about that as well. But no, so I saw that, and that was an interesting side note that I'm like, I've actually met this person before in Kansas City for the Titans game, and she's breaking the news on Vic Beasley. It's still very strange. He had a death in the family, okay, but it's still an inexcused absence. And then you've got John Robinson saying he spoke to him, and he plans on reporting. What's the exact wording?
Sometime soon.
In the near future,
yeah.
So he's just taking a $50,000 hit day after day until he decides to show up to what, get tested?
Yeah, it's very strange.
I mean, he's got to show up and get tested and leave, right?
Yeah, but it's 4 days after he starts getting tested before he could be on campus.
Yeah.
It's odd. This does not offer a lot of clarity one way or the other, to me at least. It's still a very strange story.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, you have a death in the family, and you just don't call. You don't have your agent call.
His agent couldn't reach him, by the way. He disappeared.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, your agent has a instant communication to John Robinson, would anyway, but in this case, absolutely. Getting fined every day makes less sense by the day with everything we've been discussing.
Yeah, and there's some conflicting. So I was told if he did opt out, I was told by the league, if he did opt out, he would be forgiven the $50,000 a day. Dan Graziano, friend of mine at ESPN, has it differently from a memo that the management council sent, but it was a three-day-old memo that was still evolving information. I'm seeking clarification and have not heard back from the league yet. So, as Hutton was saying about the opt-out deadline that doesn't get firmed up until these papers are signed, there's still some fluidity here. And on that issue, unfortunately, remain unclear with two conflicting reports that are totally legitimate. Dan got his out of papers that he has, and I got mine and an answer from an email from an NFL official, two different answers.
If Beasley opts out, do the Titans get back the bonuses?
If Beasley opts out, the Titans, my understanding is that the Titans would ultimately be able to, you know, fight to get back the bonus money, but it wouldn't give them cap relief this year.
They'd get cap relief
when they got it back.
That relief is base salary only.
That relief would be, yes, right. It would cost them $6 million, I believe, against the cap this year, $6 million that he's pretty much pocketed. And then they'd have to go fight to get that back. I think you would get it back because we've seen cases where guys do weird stuff and you go chase the bonus money and oftentimes you get it back. And then you get salary cap credit after the fact, but it's later.
Guys, I watched part of that exhibition with the Preds yesterday, believe it or not.
I had it on in the background.
I enjoyed it.
Didn't really.
They have some new camera angles that they're using. The broadcast looked really good.
What were the angles? I'm curious, kind of.
Just different, like, ice level angles and replay angles that I haven't noticed before on, like, a Fox Sports Tennessee broadcast. And the reason for that is they're getting all of the camera feeds from Sportsnet.
Yeah.
So you're getting the same feed that a national broadcast would have, and then you are able to disperse the cameras. A handful of them for your local broadcast. The rest are controlled by Sportsnet. So you can choose a couple different things. And, you know, Willie and Chris Mason in front of them, I've seen the setup. They have a divider wall, a clear divider wall there, a barrier in between them. But then they're looking at these massive, like, 72-inch screens in front of them.
How many?
Two. They have two. One is of, like, the actual program feed, what you see on your screen at home, and the other one is like the entire ice you see, like you would up top in your perch.
How much did it sound like a regular call? How much,
you know, so
feel like it was they weren't there?
I didn't
it
even
felt
really,
normal to me.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
that's good.
And here's the weird thing, and this
that's
may
good
sound
and
strange.
It's bad.
I think all of the leagues, and we can the NBA last night too. I think all of the leagues so far, including Major League Baseball, they've done a great job of making the game look and feel normal, even though in the background there are these virtual fans, there are cutout cardboard, you know, of a dog, or in the NBA's case, you have the live feed of a Zoom feed that they're putting on these boards. It still looks and feels the same as a game I would watch in my living room on a random March, right? Like, I think they're doing a nice job. And props to all of those leagues for thinking things through.
I mean, I want those guys to do a good job. And I want guys and women in the business across the league to do a good job. And I want to have a good experience watching these games. But I don't want the product to be too good, because we know, in cost-cutting world, if this is good enough, that there is going to be an inclination for teams, for leagues, to not send people on the road. And you're never going to convince me that no matter how well Willie and Chris Mason do here with these broadcasts, that it wouldn't be better for them to be in Edmonton, to see it and hear it real. Hutton, you cover games, high school games, you're at Titans games. And sometimes it's hard to tell, you know, but there are details that you pick up. There is something to be said for smelling the grass or seeing the snow off the skates and all of that stuff. And it adds up, and it is a loss to fans in the long run. And but look, just off your description of that last night, I could already see wheels turning in heads of Predators, who are a pretty thrifty organization because they're not a big budget thing. And somebody over there might already be thinking, you know what? We don't need to go to Anaheim to broadcast that game. We could send 10 fewer people on that trip and save.
I don't think so. Like, I mean, so
I hope not.
A couple of the camera angles as well are due to not having fans in the arena. They can move these cameras all over the place and get a different angle on the arena. So, like, you're not going to have that whenever fans return. Let me give you some examples just from a football perspective that you won't hear unless you have the crew on the road with you. The guy that's walking to the locker room, going through the tunnel while the play's going on. A guy that's getting his ankle wrapped on the sideline while a backup running back comes in for him for a play or two.
The guy who
gets dinged. Is it a shoulder? Is it a stinger? Is it the concussion? What's going on the sideline? Who's coming off the bench? Who's running in last minute to join a huddle as the 11th man because they only have 10 men on the field? You're not going to see any of that.
It's somebody in somebody's face on the sideline.
And I'll say this for someone who's done a lot of color commentary on television, and Hutton can speak to this too. What you lose is the ability for the color commentator to spot a lot of different things that's going on, because when you're doing play-by-play, you are entrenched in the play and what's going on, and you're looking at notes and you're looking at rosters and you're looking at everything else. And that play-by-play guy has to rely on the color commentator to get a sense of everything going on. So, if, for example, if Hutton and I are doing a high school game and he's getting the new quarterback that's coming in and having to focus on the play, well, I'm watching the quarterback that's going off the field limping off, or I'm seeing a coach yell at someone that's been pulled from the game, and I can see these things that's going on the sideline. I can even point it out to Hutton and get his attention of what's happening down on the sideline. You're never going to see that if you have these remote broadcasts. I'm with you, Paul. I hope they don't go this direction.
What's the monetary value on that to them?
And well, how does it should be. It should be a lot, honestly.
I agree.
I would hope so. I thought that Willie and Chris Mason did a great job with what they had yesterday on the broadcast. I couldn't tell a big difference.
That's good.
Because they were doing a fine job calling the action from a television screen. But I hope they don't go that way overall. One thing I would like to bring up, though, about this exhibition game yesterday with the Preds, they look good. They look bought in. I know that John Hines said it was a committed performance, which I thought was a good way to describe
it.
We were committed.
Yeah.
They didn't put their toes in the water. They dove in head first, and everyone was committed to the system and committed in every shift, which is a great way to put it. And I thought they looked good. I'll also say there has been a big overreaction to an exhibition game from a lot of people who cover the Preds, that this is going to signify a deep run in the playoffs. Maybe it does, but if they come out and lose 4-1 to Arizona on Sunday, it was an exhibition game. Because you know why? Because by definition, it was an exhibition game. So we can't read too much into it. The Preds played well. They look good. We don't know what the level of commitment was from Dallas in that game, being an exhibition game also. So let's just temper the expectations a little bit on what that game means in the grand scheme of things. If they come out and win 2-0 on Sunday and look exactly the same against Arizona, then okay. Now you're starting to play with something here, right? Maybe this is a team that took this time to regroup and buy into their new coach's system and could start to deliver on expectations in the preseason. But let's not jump to too many conclusions off of one exhibition game.
Well, here's the reason for optimism right now. You're right in that we can't react to one performance. But the performance comes off of a layoff, and with a coach that's now had a chance to broad view, tweak some things, but also get very narrow in his line of thinking with individuals. And I thought with the pace, with the time off, the coaching change, the message, I thought they looked like one team. And you could say that at times this past season, that before the shutdown, but there were a lot of conversations, meetings, rough nights throughout the season. The night the Preds went to Edmonton and Minnesota in the back-to-back, that was the night that the tornado hit. There were some rough games and a rough patch there. And then three more games after that before COVID hit. And it was Dallas, at Dallas, and Montreal. And they won all three of those games right before things shut down. But it was a roller coaster. And I thought yesterday, just watching the team, they looked refreshed, healthy, and they look like one team. I don't think there's a lot of conversation and inner, you know, thinking and mindsets going on there. I think they're all on one page and they're in. I mean, from Dallas's point of view too, I thought the pace was interesting to see for an exhibition.
Thing is, I mean, especially once it becomes real, right? Everybody should look refreshed and healthy.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Right. So it should be a refreshed and healthy league.
But now everybody has the same amount of talent.
Now it's about talent.
Right.
And how well you schemed while you were away. You know, it's about coaching and who's mm-hmm. who studied up better and figured things out better. So we're going to find out a lot about a lot of that stuff.
Something very random here. Laviolette was bad in areas where it was almost predictable. Some people did predict it. That after a while, his message was going to wear thin on this locker room. And no matter how great things were when he first got here. And, you know, if you said that then, you ended up being right. But undoubtedly, he was very good in postseason play as a coach. You know, once he got to postseason, he was very good. The message may be lost during the season, but he was great at the inner workings of matchups for a series. And I have randomly thought in the preparation for Arizona, I wonder if all things being equal, if you knew you were going to have this 145-day shutdown, do you make the change? Do you bring John Hines in?
Well, would you be
knowing
in the position?
Knowing that you're in the postseason.
They wouldn't be in the Marriott.
So, yes, they make the change. Great point. Yeah. No, things were not going well. And a change had to happen. Change is going to happen, as James Franklin would say. But Laviolette was very good in the postseason as a matchup coach. So,
well, we get to find out now about
that's
John
the intriguing
Hines.
Part now.
But also, it's so random and different this year. Regardless of what happens, they could get swept, or they could go to the Stanley Cup Final. And we'd probably still have questions about, okay, but now what's it going to look like when you have a normal season and normal
right.
playoffs
right.
and have fans in the stands and are actually coming off an 82-game season and rolling right into the playoffs, the end of a tough, long season, not having that layoff? There's still going to be questions one way or the other. My point is, I don't think we can draw some definitive conclusion about John Hines' playoff coaching performance based on the extenuating circumstances of this one season. But going back to the broadcast, Hutton, and what I saw yesterday, mm-hmm. and I watched probably a good period and a half of the game, I think the NHL is doing a great job from what I've read about the bubble and from the viewing experience. And we can talk a little bit about the NBA also, another league that I've been impressed with how the on-court, on-ice product looks given this time and these different circumstances.
Paul, it is still a final three-minute league, though. Have
I
no
remain
fear.
Uninterested.
Both games
COVID,
last night.
COVID or not.
Both games went last night, one possession games at the end.
I would have liked to have seen those one possessions. I watched.
LeBron last night had a great finish. I mean, he missed a shot, followed it up, put it in, and then that gave the lead for the Lakers with like 12 seconds to go. That was the final score. But I was thinking about Paul, like, oh, it's too late to text him. But it's a one-possession game with 3 minutes to play.
Paul George.
Which is a good thing, but
yeah.
I didn't need the rest of the game.
Paul George hit an incredible three to tie it with 28 seconds left
off
a pull-up. And then LeBron missed his shot. It looked like, almost like he was throwing it to himself the way he did it. Missed the shot and then followed it up, like you said, Hutton. That was the game winner. And then Paul George tried to recreate the same great shot he hit the time before and missed it at the buzzer, and the Lakers won. But the overall product on television was great. And how weird is it that Rudy Gobert, who started all of this, was patient zero in the NBA and was licking the microphones of reporters when all this happened, touching, scored the first basket and scored the game-winning free throws in the first game back for the NBA.
He didn't lick them. He just touched them.
Well, he was doing something where he was licking things
was
in the locker room.
Obnoxious.
There was also reports that he was licking things in the locker room around people.
I don't like him.
Coming up, Austin Price. We do like him. The VolQuest Report. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
You've always wanted to put Paul Kuharsky in your pocket and take him everywhere with you. Now you can download the 104.5 The Zone app and listen to The Zone from anywhere.
The SEC playing a conference-only schedule of 10 games with more. We welcome in Austin Price of VolQuest.com for the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Austin, hope you're doing well, man.
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well. Paul, Austin is on his way to Clinchview Golf Course, Clinchview Country Club, where
that's country.
That is located in Bean Station, Tennessee.
Oh,
Bean Station, it is God's country up there in Granger County.
Bean Station? I live in with a Bean Station.
My buddy Alan Bean is a part of the Bean family that Bean Station was named after.
How about that?
You know Alan Bean.
Now that's
absolutely
my attorney.
Here comes Withrow with either total sarcasm or with the nugget of the decade.
Oh no, that's not sarcasm. I'm connected in some way, Austin, to every prominent Tennessee family from years back. So I can tell you some tidbit on the Sevier family also. I've known many Severs that have now migrated to Nashville. So I know them all.
They're all sired by Yvonne Schmitto somehow. That's for sure.
You know, the older I get, guys, the more you really appreciate doing things with your dad or your mom. So going to play golf with my dad, and you know, he don't play a lot, but when we play, he always seems to, like, you know, we went to the Greenbrier a couple years ago. He holed out for Eagle and hadn't played in like 2 years. I mean, he always does stuff like that, you know, when you don't ever play, and it drives me nuts.
Right now at VolQuest, you have a free trial until game day, VolQuest.com, for the latest news and notes on the Tennessee Volunteers. Austin, it's not official that Tennessee is going to open up against Florida for this all-SEC schedule, but if that is the case, and we expect it to be because of the date set, is that good or bad for Tennessee?
Yeah, I don't think it hurts. I mean, like, obviously you'd love to be, you know, not playing your season opener and be able to say you've knocked the rust off, but, I mean, everybody's going to be under the same conditions. Florida will not have played a game. Tennessee will not have played a game. You're into this weird year with all these different circumstances going on. You know, everybody's on a level playing field. And so, you know, I don't think that it really hurts Tennessee in any way. You know, I think that you're going to see, one, the cream rise to the top, but two, it make it almost a little more realistic that you see some road wins in the SEC, something you don't see a whole lot of, because – even if there are 20,000 fans, that's not going to be a huge home atmosphere to overcome. So, like, at times, I think the home team will have to really kind of, you know, make some adjustments in game. And you can't always just rely on the wave of the crowd and the momentum there on big hits or big plays, because I do think that the road teams will be able to, you know, feel more or just as much at home going on the road as they do when they're at home this year, because of the fact that the fans won't be there.
Austin, does this give Harrison Bailey a better chance at winning the starting job, given a longer training camp and a later start to the season? And for that matter, all true freshmen coming in now seem like they have a better shot to play earlier in their freshman season because the season's starting 3 weeks later.
I mean, I think, yeah, you're right. I think that's the thing that I take away from starting September 26th is everybody that's a freshman or doesn't have much experience will get that much more time to prepare for the season opener instead of kind of, you know, going straight into a game, the first week in September. I think it helped, but I think it helps more with the Keyshawn Lawrences, the Jalen Hyatts, the Morvan Josephs than it does, Harrison Bailey. I think for the quarterback position, it's just harder because so much more is on you. I think it's much easier at a skill position to use those extra weeks to your advantage. But, yeah, I mean, Harrison's going to have a chance. I don't think he can beat out JG. I know everybody's got the weight of the world on the kid. I expect Garantano to be the quarterback. And after that, we'll see who falls in behind him. I continue to hear good things about Brian Maurer, who,
signals rough in Bean Station.
Yesterday has run a couple of weeks since he started their Bean
Station. Yeah, we may need to reconnect with Austin. Signals typically rough going up to Bean Station.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
We'll try one more here, Austin, and see if we can hear you. So we now know the schedule format: 10 games, conference only in the SEC. We'll soon know the exact schedule once the SEC decides what that's going to look like. So now the next decisions being made will be attendance at games. Philip Fulmer put out an email yesterday, and I thought it was very smart where he included in the email we realize that stadium capacity could change week to week in terms of what's allowed and how they're going to go about doing it. I think that's important, Austin, because numbers could look a lot different, better or worse. You could have less people going to games or no people going to games late in the season, or you may have 75,000 people allowed to go to games in the SEC when you get into October and November. We don't really know right now. What did you make of that email sent out to season ticket holders from Philip Fulmer?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely offers some wiggle room, doesn't it? I just feel like that's almost unfair to programs. I get it. At the end of the day, they can make more money and get more people in the stands. That's what's going to happen. But how fair is it if Tennessee hosts Florida and they've got 15,000 fans there, and then Tennessee has to go to Georgia late in the year and there's 60,000 fans there? I mean, I think that's counter. It makes more money, but it's also counterproductive to, home field advantage, at different parts of the year. So, I'll be interested to see how they handle that. I'm also interested to see how they handle the scheduling, because you got different options there, whether it be just adding your 21 and 22 opponent or going strength of schedule. I think for 21 and 20, if you go the 21-22 model, guys, I think Florida's the one that comes up with the short stick there, because not only do they add Alabama, they also add Texas A&M. They already play LSU, so that's three biggies from the West, whereas Tennessee and Georgia would play Alabama. And then Tennessee would play Alabama, LSU, Georgia would play Auburn and Alabama, but then they would have Arkansas, Mississippi State, Tennessee would have Arkansas, Ole Miss. So they only had to play two Big East of the West. So, I think that for Tennessee, I think it behooves them to want that 21-22 model for scheduling.
Austin, what are the Vols getting in Demarius McGee, the versatile corner?
Well, a guy that the staff is just in love with, has been in love with. They've worked hard to get that one done. He was going to go early August and then surprised Derek Ansley yesterday with a phone call and told him he wanted to commit. And DA was really excited. This is a guy that Tennessee feels is as talented of a corner as they've, gotten in the boat since they've been here. He's long, he's 6'1". He's got to put on weight, but he's got a nice frame to him. He's about 165 pounds. So he's got to continue to add weight, but plays, all over the field down there. And really, they use him as a free safety in high school. He'll be a corner in college, but he's also a guy that gives versatility with his ability to return kick, something he does really, really well.
Austin, enjoy golf today. with your dad. Sounds like a blast, and we'll catch up next week with the VolQuest report.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate you.
Yep. Austin Price there from Bean Station. Paul embarrassed that the state that he lives in has a Bean Station. He also lived in a state in Jersey that has Buttsville, New Jersey. Very unfortunate.
If there was a properly done Bean Station shirt, I might wear it. And if Clay Travis is hearing that, he's making a Bean Station shirt.
Bean Station is not even close to the most embarrassing town city names in Tennessee.
Not even close.
Oh, I don't think Bean Station's that bad at all. Bucksnort, far worse than Bean Station.
I've known Bucksnort for a long time, though.
Real.
Bean Station is new to me today.
Did you notice where Austin Huff is also doing the same T-shirt idea that Clay took from Chad? Chad, will you also be getting a reward, a bonus?
It's not just Austin Huff. There's like five of them out there from different companies.
Here's the difference. The other four aren't among your best friends.
Austin Huff later admitted on Twitter. Austin Huff very easily could have seen the same tweet
you guys
that
chat
I put
a lot?
Out and did it.
You guys text a lot?
I talk with Austin Huff a lot. I'm not blaming
him.
I'm not accusing him of – he's a Dodgers fan also, so I'm not accusing him of stealing my idea necessarily.
The only one who stole
the idea. Ask Clay the question when we come back because I want to know what my cut looks like also. I'm interested to know.
I want to know his standards of operational friendship.
Was John Glennon ever written off of a question that you asked in the Titans locker room?
Yeah, that's the same because there's huge money in that. We all know.
You complain about the same.
You're making a killing.
You complain about the same in that.
To be fair, I don't know that there's huge money in this T-shirt.
That are different.
I don't know that there's huge money in this T-shirt either. We can ask Clay how it's been selling. I don't know if they've sold any. So when you say that, I don't know what the dollar figures look
again,
like right now if it's a big seller.
Props to Chad for getting a T-shirt printed because this show can no longer have that done.
Oh, we know that.
Or this station.
Speaking of T-shirts, by the way.
Station,
where are our T-shirts?
When we could have T-shirts printed, we had them printed a couple years ago or 3 years ago in the Preds run. We have those T-shirts available to give
to
you.
We've got
next week, our Preds watch party, Scoreboard Bar and Grill. We're going to give away 100 of those Preds Midday 180 themed T-shirts.
Where have those been hiding?
In somebody's closet.
Hutton, we're not expanding into bigger areas. We're narrowing. We're trying to keep our radio station on the air. Let's start there.
Yeah.
Someday maybe we can expand the envelope. Right now, let's be thankful we're
on. I got news for you, Paul. I'm going to continue to climb. That's the mandate. Midday with ADQ.
I don't know where you're
going. 104.5. Follow me or not.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going.